Welcome to the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All Year in Review 2014. What a year it's been, Baltimore fans.
Hello, listeners of SFMSports.net. I am Ray Atkinson, and this is Josh Hall, and this is another year in review for the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All 2014 edition.
Yep, we had an entire calendar year of ups and downs and just amazing stories in general, and not just Baltimore sports, but all sports.
Yeah, pretty much. We're going to be talking about mainly Baltimore sports, since this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. But at the same time, we're going to have some national stuff as well, because there were some things on the national front that affected the local front.
Yeah, basically. Like, maybe the crab shortage, I guess you could say, for...
Crab shortage?
I don't know.
Was there a crab shortage this year?
I'm just spinning news, Ray. We don't have the...
You know what, though? This is one summer that I did not have Maryland crabs.
Really?
You didn't
have any Maryland steamed crabs?
Not this past summer, no.
Well, I mean, Texas Louisiana crabs are coming in right now, but yeah, Maryland crabs, though, they are the real deal.
All right, so talking
sports and not crabs.
Talking about, unless there's a team called the Blue Crabs.
You'd be surprised how many teams are named after a crab, maybe rec teams.
All right, well, going into 2014, you just saw how the Ravens were on an 8-8 season. It was the first time under John Harbaugh in the Joe Flacco era that the Ravens did not make the playoffs. So 2014 started out with no football in Baltimore. So that was kind of a downer.
Yeah, it was kind of a downer, but you were looking at the rest of the AFC. Cincinnati, with their tough defense, ended up winning the AFC North. You had the Denver Broncos, who were just a complete powerhouse of an offense right there, led by Peyton Manning, who... you know, once again won MVP and was just one of the best players in the National Football League at that time.
Yeah, but going into the Super Bowl, he was not. He met a buzzsaw that was the Seattle Seahawks, and it was kind of like the NFC Championship was your de facto Super Bowl, because both the 49ers and the Seahawks were the better team than the Denver Broncos. And going into that Super Bowl, yeah, it was off to a dreadful start, and it did not get any better for one Peyton Manning. Seattle Seahawks won the Super Bowl to start the year off. And then it went into...
And it created the superstar named Richard Sherman.
That it did. Well, the NFC Championship created the superstar named Richard Sherman.
Do we have that soundbite, by the way?
Yes, we do.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm going to shut it for you real quick. L.O.B.
That was courtesy of Fox and Aaron Andrews. And
Aaron Andrews, yeah.
She looked like she was stunned by the reaction that Richard Sherman had after probably the biggest block of his life going into the Super Bowl. And it turned out to be the biggest block of his life, because it led to a Super Bowl victory for the Seattle Seahawks. And that was one way to start off the year with a bang. Going into the offseason and spring training, pitchers and catchers report. But wait. There was one other story that happened in February that would have ramifications throughout the year to come, and that would be one Ray Rice knocking out his then-fiancée, Janae Palmer, in an elevator.
And, of course, at this time, there wasn't any video evidence that was shown to the public where he did knock her out. It looked like he dragged her out of the elevator
And that seemed like so long ago, and you were just hearing accounts of it, and how it seemed like how he hit her, and then her head bounced off the railing, and she was dragged out the elevator. There was no video evidence when this story first came. It was only, like, the next month that video leaked of him dragging his fiance, and it was the aftermath that we saw. And there was a backlash to come, but as we found out later on, and we'll talk about that later as we were chronicling year in chronological order here, but as we found out later on, that reaction that was to that dragging video paled in comparison of what was to come.
Absolutely, and like I said on this show back during that time, that there will be more video evidence to come, and the outcry will be very negative.
And we predicted pretty much accurately when it was going to be leaked. It was either going to be leaked at the beginning of the season or just when his suspension is about to end, and it happened like just when his suspension was about to end. He was going to be reinstated in 48 hours after that second video surfaced.
Absolutely. And, of course, many Baltimore fans had their theories of what happened during that time. Oh, they were probably drunk and probably fell over, didn't knock her out or anything like that. It's all a misunderstanding.
That was when Ray Rice, apologist, had a leg to stand on. They had somewhat of a leg to stand on, saying, hey, we don't have all the facts, and there's two sides to every story. I said, yeah, that's what you say when a story's coming out right here. We don't actually have video evidence. Then the video evidence comes out, and that's a changing of a tune. But, like I said, this was right before pitchers and catchers were a report for spring training.
And no new Orioles signings have been announced as of yet.
But
during
then,
that time.
But then, as soon as we get to pitchers and catchers reporting for spring training, they make a signing. Nelson Cruz.
Nelson Cruz.
And it turned out to be quite the difference maker for the Baltimore Orioles.
It was quite the bargain deal right there.
Yeah, he
Of course, his agent screwed up on that one.
Yeah, they got him out for a rental, so to speak. They got him pretty much for the original asking price that he wanted if he was going to become a free agent. They signed Nelson Cruz for a steal. Turned out to be a one-year rental, but what a rental it was, Josh.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. He went on to have a 40-plus home run season, over 100-plus RBIs, and was in contention for the Most Valuable Player award. Of course, that award ultimately went to Los Angeles Angels superstar outfielder Mike Trout. But needless to say, that was a huge signing for the Baltimore Orioles. But needless to say, though, not all their signings went according to plan. They did sign a starting pitcher by the name of one, and I know I messed up on his name several times during this show.
But in the end of the day, you finally got it right.
Ubaldo Jimenez.
Ubaldo Jimenez. Yes, you got it.
Oh, man.
And he turned
out...
What
was that, four-year, $50 million deal right there?
Yeah, that's 4 years, $50 million. I'm sure you want back Peter Angelos.
Yeah, I know. And, yeah, unfortunately for Mr. Jimenez, it just... Yeah, I know I did.
Just one final time of 2014, you had to flub the name.
But yeah, the statistics for Jimenez did not turn out the way that we had hoped. But before we get to the Orioles talk and everything, we do have to give a little credit to some of the big stars from the months of March and the early parts of April. Let's start with the UConn Huskies winning the Division I NCAA tournament, men's college basketball, and you leave the Jim Calhoun era, and then you go right into the national championship game, which Connecticut won decisively. Shabazz Napier was the star of that entire thing, and ultimately landed in the NBA draft. So, big ups to the UConn Huskies on that one. And also, Daniel Bryan, the big underdog, was one of the biggest stories of 2014, at least the early part of 2014, winning two matches at WrestleMania 30 and becoming the WWE World Heavyweight Champion in the main event, which was a great way to end the match and also a great way to culminate a storyline.
Yeah, I guess you're going to put the wrestling equation in this, aren't you?
Undertaker loses to Brock Lesnar.
That actually was big sports
news.
Oh,
my God,
that was on ESPN. That was on Deadspin. That was
Los
everywhere.
Angeles Times.
Yeah, when The Undertaker lost to Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, that was a big deal.
That was a big deal.
That was a huge deal. Like, everyone was, like, freaking out. And then you remember the reaction shots that they had of everybody when Lesnar pinned him.
My favorite is the dude with the glasses who just had both of his hands on top of his head, like he just lost his entire money in a mortgage deal.
Yeah, it's almost as if my life is over. Of course, I always liked the one guy with the glasses where his mouth was hanging open like he just had a stroke.
Yeah, and no, that is not a Jerry the King Lawler joke there. We weren't throwing that in there.
No, not at all. Jerry's heart attack, that was the year before, right?
That was, I think, 2 years before.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
So that's not, that doesn't count as swallowing 2014 news.
He ate fried food a week after that.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
Yeah, I guess he said, I'm not changing my lifestyle. Yeah, whatever. I'm Jerry the King Lawler.
Yeah, you live that long. But, yeah, moving on to April, we get to Orioles opening day. And, of course, you know how most fans were in Baltimore, like, oh, big deal. We signed Nelson Cruz. He got popped for PEDs last year. Oh, you signed Ubaldo Jimenez. Okay, well, maybe he'll do some good, whatever. But we still had the same guys who mailed it in September. We're not going to make it far and everything. And lo and behold, even though you didn't have Manny Machado to start off the season, who was still recovering from an apparent knee surgery from the end of 2013, the Orioles still managed to hover around 500 towards the end of April, and then once they get into May, they start to win a little bit and also hit another hurdle.
Yeah, they lose Matt Wieters, who actually up to that point was their best hitter, and he was leading the club in all categories when he went down. That was a huge blow to this organization, but lo and behold, they were able to replace him with both Caleb Joseph and another young guy.
Yeah, Nick Hundley as well, the veteran who became a mid-season acquisition there.
I was talking about Steve Clevenger.
Oh, Steve Clevenger. Well, Steve Clevenger could hit. Yeah. I mean, there's no question that he could hit.
But I was also going to get to Nick Hundley as well. But Nick Hundley, and you had Caleb Joseph and Steve Clevenger, and you had those three guys at catcher, and you had yourself a decent replacement, a decent suitable replacement for one Matt Wieters. But losing that bat was a huge blow that it took them a little bit to recover from, but they eventually did recover and weathered the storm, only to hit another hurdle.
Yep, and that hurdle was
the Manny Machado suspension for throwing a bat at Josh Donaldson.
Oh yeah,
that was quite the weekend.
That created like a semi rivalry with the Oakland Athletics, which seemed to have calmed down about 2 weeks after, where they would eventually meet each other again at Oakland.
Yeah, and it also kind of hurt Manny Machado's reputation quite a bit. You were seeing the cesspool that was Twitter talking about Manny Machado. You were even seeing national sports pundits saying, come on, kid, you don't play the game like this. You got to learn how to play the game, and this is not the way you do it. And eventually Manny Machado knew that and learned that. Buck Showalter got to him and said, no, you got to be able to do it this way. And the Baltimore Orioles kind of kept this a little bit hush-hush by not letting the media access Manny Machado. They just simply put Rocco Baco out there for Masson. He was the one who got the lone interview with Manny Machado. They just kept him shielded from the media and said, this will not become a distraction to you. You need to learn to get your head in the game, and you're going to get back out here, and you're going to be our third baseman, everyday third baseman, that is a guy that can rival range that rivals Brooks Robinson.
Yep, and once we get to the summertime, once we get into June and July, and things start heating up for the Baltimore Orioles in the AL East and still staying in contention in that division, we get to the All-Star game and we get to Adam Jones in the Home Run Derby, just blowing bubbles and basically just having fun like he normally does in the outfield out in center field. And it was always nice to see Oriole representation in the All-Star game. Granted, it wasn't like it was in 2013 when you had Manny Machado, J.J. Hardy, and Chris Davis all in the lineup contributing for the American League team. Needless to say, though, it was a nice experience. It was a nice mid-season for the Orioles. But once August hit and once September hit, we saw a couple of more hurdles. And going back to Manny Machado, this hurdle was no suspension this time, Ray.
Nope, it was a full-blown injury.
Yeah. And, of course, earlier reports indicated that, well, Manny may have buckled a little bit, but it's nothing to worry about. Well, of course, flash forward 24 hours later after that little announcement, it turned out Manny Machado needed another surgery, therefore being out for the rest of the 2014 season.
And it kind of was like remnants of the 2013 season when, even though he did that on a run to first base and completely fell over, and I was in a bar at the time watching this game and just watched Manny Machado just completely fall at first base. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Way. This is going to adversely affect his career, that the way that he buckled and fell over at first base. And people were wondering if he was going to be ready for opening day. And now he suffered another injury in 2014 after recovering from that injury. It's in suspension. Wasn't the best of years for one Manny Machado.
Absolutely not. And also you had some switching around going on at third base, mainly Ryan Flaherty getting more playing time in there. Also, Jonathan Scope having a testy arm out here and there at third base. Granted, he was a more suitable second baseman towards the end of the year. And that's another guy we have to bring up too, because I know people will look at Jonathan Scope's second year in the majors. Granted, it was probably his first full year in the majors, and said, well, the kid wasn't all that good. But Jonathan Scope, I guess you could say, maybe not in the beginning part of the year, but in the second half of the year, was one of the Orioles' more improved players in terms of defense, and that helped their stretch out a lot.
That it did. And then we talk about obstacles. It seemed like this was the theme of the year for the Baltimore Orioles, was overcoming obstacles. Chris Davis gets popped for Adderall.
Yep, in September, and this is where it comes on the heels of an Orioles imminent American League East clinching season.
Yeah, it was actually only a few days before they were able to clinch, and you were wondering if this news was going to dominate that, and once again, give credit to the Orioles of keeping that a little bit more under the wraps. It just became like a little bit of a blurb on the ticker, and then it day later was fizzled out. Nobody talked about it again.
Yep. And but another thing to highlight for the Orioles season is their starting pitching. But before we were able to get to the Orioles and the starting pitching and how well it's played this season, we have to go to Ravens training camp. You have all the news circulating around Ray Rice. He made his public apologies. He accepted the NFL's then two-game suspension for domestic dispute.
And this was he apologized to the fans in a embarrassing press conference, just a completely embarrassing press conference where he did not once apologize to his now wife, and he was looking over at her and not even acknowledging her. She was even there. I'm like, I'd like to apologize to the fans, the Ravens organization, my head coach, the NFL, your wife. She's the real victim here. You're going to apologize to her or no? And then she apologizes for her role in the incident.
Yeah,
the Ravens tweeted it.
Yeah, you get that whole thing. You had the Kevin Byrne article coming out during that time.
I like Ray Rice.
Sounds like Buck Showalter almost. But
I try to put in the, I like our guys.
Yeah, I like our guys, yeah. But Ravens offseason, of course, they do acquire Gary Kubiak as their offensive coordinator, and Gary Kubiak, of course, had a long history beforehand of being successful with quarterbacks and, you know, developing their game a little bit, making it better. Of course, this would pan out for Joseph Vincent Flacco and the Ravens offense in 2014, but before that, the Ravens had some drafting to do with their first overall pick, well, first round pick in the 2014 draft. Ozzie Newsome once again went with his Alabama ties and drafted who?
C.J. Mosley.
C.J. Mosley to become the heir apparent of number 52, Ray Lewis, and play that position.
So far, he's off to a good start.
Yep, making the Pro Bowl in his rookie year. And granted, though, Darryl Smith also had a 100-plus tackle season for the Ravens. We'll get more into that later. But the Ravens did draft quite well defensively, picking up C.J. Mosley, picking up Terrence Brooks, the safety, and picking up the defensive lineman out of Florida State, Timmy Jernigan. So it was a good trade. It was a good draft, I should say, for defensive players.
Yeah, as I mentioned on episode 66 of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, is that the New York Jets now have to find another GM. They've gone through six since 1995 when the Ravens came into existence. The Ravens have had one since they came into existence, and that is Ozzie Newsome. And the guy drafts well. He scouts well. He finds ways to build teams. And maybe that little bit after the Super Bowl 35 win in 2000, maybe a little bit after that, you could say that was kind of a hiccup for him because he tried to repeat with that team and tried to hang on to the guys as long as he could, and that ended up getting them in salary cap hell. But at the same time, the guy has been a consistent bright point for the Baltimore Ravens, and unfortunately, even he looked bad in this Ray Rice scandal, and he wasn't immune to it as well. You mentioned Kevin Byrne with the I Like Ray Rice article, which you can still actually find on the internet, believe it or not.
Yep.
You can no longer find that tweet on the Ravens' official Twitter account. They deleted the Jhené Palmer apologizes for her role in the incident. That one has been deleted, long and behold, because that was just a complete meat hook that they just laid out there for everybody to take advantage of.
Yeah, and of course, even though the Ray Rice issue was going on and it seemed to have damned the Ravens at the beginning of the year, it didn't really put an end to the Ravens season. Of course, we'll go more into that. But September Ray was the month of the Baltimore Orioles.
That it was, and we all remember that one fateful night. We were all sitting there on the couch waiting for them to clinch. And they do, and a party ensues.
Ground ball to Steve Pierce, runs it to first base. Tommy Hunter was closing, by the way. And Tommy Hunter hadn't assumed the closing role since Zach Britton ultimately took over that role.
After walking Torrey Hunter to get the Miguel Cabrera, how'd that work out for you, Mr. Tommy Hunter?
Yep, and you know who got the win in that game? Ubaldo Jimenez. Funny how things turn out there, right?
Yep, and lo and behold, you see a celebration of epic proportions for Camden Yards, a celebration that was ultimately criticized by national baseball pundits. But you know what? This is Baltimore. You know what? We haven't clinched a AL East title since 1997. It's the first time in 17 years the Orioles were able to clinch one. After enduring 14 years of losing, this was a good exclamation point on that losing season. On that stretch of losing seasons.
Yep, you will never forget Adam Jones running out to the crowd, throwing as many pies as he could in fans' faces. You'll never forget the look on Nick Markakis' face when he heard the PA announcer Ryan Wagner say, "Here are your 2014 American League East champion Baltimore Orioles."
And he looks up and he's like, "Hot damn."
Yep, hot damn. I'm going to the playoffs and I'm fully healthy this time.
Yes, and maybe he can be a factor in the playoffs. And then, September was a great month for the Baltimore Orioles, despite the Chris Davis. They overcame all of these obstacles. That was the theme of the Baltimore Orioles season.
But before we could get to the Orioles postseason, the Ravens had the Ray Rice saga continue, but in the worst way possible
it
in week
exploded
two.
Exploded after week one. It was immediately after week one. This was just 48 hours before Ray Rice was going to be eligible to play in the NFL again because he had a two-game suspension.
And it was about 72 hours before they had to play the Pittsburgh Steelers on the Thursday night game in week two.
Yep, and this happened. We saw him dragging his fiance out of the elevator, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, that's pretty bad. But then the actual punch leaks, and you see everyone on social media saying, I am burning my Ray Rice jersey. I'm trading in my Ray Rice jersey. I'll never be able to look at him the same way again. But I kept thinking to myself with this reaction after seeing the drag video, what did you expect a knockout punch to look like?
That is very true. And the one thing I posted on social media was, I'm not sure if people are outraged by the incident or they are just outraged for the fact that they have probably never witnessed domestic violence on video.
At least not in terms of nonfiction. They've seen domestic violence in fiction movies, especially when you the What's Love Got to Do With It movie chronicling Tina Turner and Ike Turner.
Yeah, Angela Bassett movie, yeah.
I do remember another movie with Jennifer Lopez, Enough, where that was domestic violence, and she decided to take matters into her own hands.
She kickboxed her husband to death.
Yes, she did, and knocked him into a table.
Yeah.
And so I think this is the first time people actually saw domestic violence actually in action, and it shocked them, and it was quite the reaction to the point where the NFL had to do a complete about-face. Earlier, Roger Goodell said, we messed this one up because they knew the video was about to be leaked, because kind of funny that the Revel Casino was closing down and that video was going to be put on the market for one TMZ. TMZ beat everybody except for maybe Chris Mortensen and Peter King, because they described in detail what was on that video. They'd seen the video and put it out there, but they even said that maybe the NFL had access to the video, and that was the other big controversy. Did they and the Baltimore Ravens see this video and still give him a two-game suspension?
Yeah, and that is the unfortunate sight of the issue that went on between Ray Rice, the Baltimore Ravens, and the National Football League. Now, you could say the Ravens had every right to release Ray Rice, because NFL teams do have a right to do that. If they feel the need to see fit to release you because of certain behavior, they have the right to do that. Now,
that's actually what is keeping him out of the league right now, is because they released him. He's been reinstated since by the NFL because he was suspended indefinitely, yeah. Appealed and got it overturned. But now, because he was released by the Baltimore Ravens, he doesn't have a job right now.
And the NFLPA did have a point in terms of the suspension. Ray Rice was already suspended and serving his suspension at the time where he got suspended indefinitely again. You can't suspend a guy two times in a row knowing what you already knew and knowing that this incident would have taken place irregardless.
Yeah, that falls under double jeopardy under the United States Constitution, but that's with law enforcement. But it's also in the collective bargaining agreement for the NFL. You cannot suspend a guy twice for the same incident.
While he's serving a suspension as well.
Especially while he's serving the incident for the suspension as well. And a victim of unfortunate timing, as this was going down, Adrian Peterson decides he wants to have a child abuse case against him as well. And he is also not in the league. And unlike Ray Rice, he was not the victim of double jeopardy. Roger Goodell took him out of the league, put him on the commissioner's suspension list where he still gets paid. But now they took him off because of his legal proceedings. And now you don't see Adrian Peterson in the league. He may be retiring. We may be seeing the end of Adrian Peterson and might see Ray Rice in 2 years.
Yep, and also continuing the trend of just a terrible year for Rays in sports, Ray McDonald having a domestic dispute in the regular season from the San Francisco 49ers.
And then you also had Greg Hardy for the Panthers, mm-hmm. and that you think that, man, this could be enough to topple the NFL or maybe even the Ravens, but they rose above the Ray Rice story and beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the NFL is still here today despite the rumors and musings that Roger Goodell had seen the tape before he made that 2-game suspension.
But moving on from that incident, an unsung hero that came through for the Ravens to begin the year and to take the place of Ray Rice in the running back position is one journeyman, Justin Forsett.
That he did, and Justin Forsett, and was also with Lorenzo Taliaferro, and Bernard Pierce even had a few cups of coffee where he was pretty decent. And you saw where this Ravens team could survive without Ray Rice, and because he was also a constant with John Harbaugh and Joe Flacco. Ray Rice came into the league at the same time, and you were thinking this guy had a completely clean record. He was, for all intents and purposes, you would think he'd be a good, outstanding citizen, but this put a damper on that. His reputation is forever tarnished, and this was the big news story for not only Baltimore sports, but just sports in general. It has endured the test of time. It still has legs. There's still video being leaked from that casino, and people are still talking about it because he's able to be signed by a football team, but right now he's not being signed by a football team. And that was the big dominant story of Baltimore sports. But going back to the Orioles on the other side and getting some good news here.
October baseball,
and they swept Cy Young winners, Justin Verlander. They swept all of these guys for the Detroit Tigers.
Max Scherzer, David Price.
And David Price. They swept three Cy Young winners and beat them in 4 games.
But we cannot bring up the American League Divisional Series against the Tigers without bringing up that one moment that will forever live in Orioles infamy.
Yep, Delman Young, his 3-run double.
Yep, and thus the Orioles win Game 2. In the American League Divisional Series. And I remember being at that game too. And Ray, you could not hear a thing. If a nuclear missile landed in Baltimore, you wouldn't have been able to hear it when that moment happened. That's how loud it was.
The earth shook. The earth shook from Camden Yards, and that place got extremely loud. And it just was a magical moment when Delman Young hit that 3-run double. And you hear that this is awesome chants from the crowd. And I absolutely loved that part. And they go on, they sweep the Detroit Tigers 3 out of 5, and then they go and face Kansas City. Not the more suitable outcome, unfortunately. It was actually the complete opposite of the Detroit series. They were the ones who got swept. And Baltimore turned its back to Jeremy Guthrie.
Yep, turned its back to Jeremy Guthrie. Jeremy Guthrie, of course, had to come out with what he thought was a trendy shirt. These O's ain't royal. And thus just creating a rift for the team and the fan base that gave this guy a chance when nobody else would have.
Nope, and he was actually one of the better pitchers that the Orioles had for a little bit from like 2007 to 2011 because he had the earned run average. He had the whip. The problem is he didn't have the wins or losses because he never got any run support, and that would ultimately was what held him back from being in a national discussion. But I've always liked Jeremy Guthrie. I still like Jeremy Guthrie, even though he had to come out and wear the shirt. So did Jeremy Guthrie turn his back on Baltimore? Did Baltimore turn his back on Jeremy Guthrie? Chicken or the egg argument you can make. But at the same time, the Orioles lose in 4 games. They lose then in the offseason Nick Markakis and Nelson Cruz. They also lose Andrew Miller, who ultimately I thought was the big
piece. To the Yankees.
Yeah, he was the one that went to the Yankees. Because every other starter that the Orioles have goes to the Yankees. Everybody talks about like it's a big plague, like it's plagued this organization for years. No, it was just Mike Messina who went to the Yankees. But yeah. at the same time, though, you lose those guys and you're trying to find a way to replace them. You do get back Manny Machado, Chris Davis, and Matt Wieters. So it's hard to tell what the Orioles can do from here on out, but that was what 2014 held for them, is that they won the division. They swept the Tigers, but then lost to the Royals, and that was the big exclamation point. But as Adam Jones said, the season was still effing awesome. And the year of the Baltimore Orioles was very special.
Absolutely. And to cap off the year, even though I'm sure they both would have rather have held the illustrious World Series trophy, Dan Duquette wins the Executive of the Year Award, and Buck Showalter wins his third Manager of the Year Award.
That he does, and it was well-deserved, finally. And, I mean, the Orioles, what can you say about this season other than, yeah, Adam Jones had the perfect words for it. It was effing awesome. So, Orioles 2014 were a good highlight. The bad highlight is Ray Rice, and the ongoing highlight is the Baltimore Ravens, because they came out, they played really well at the beginning of the season, held their own despite the fact that they lost a bunch of cornerbacks. They lost Haloti Ngata, and all of a sudden this is starting to become very familiar to baseball fans about a team trying to overcome all this adversity.
And then Adderall kicks in.
and
not in a medicinal way, folks.
Nope. So they lose Haloti Ngata. They have nobody really in the cornerback position to play because everybody's either hurt or cut. But at the same time, though, the Baltimore Ravens were able to somehow squeak out a 10-6 record and were able to clinch a playoff berth with a little help from San Diego.
Absolutely. And also to cap off the rest of the year, too, you also have to congratulate the Maryland Terrapins on going to their second consecutive bowl game under Randy Edsall. 7-5 record, even though I think they should have been 8-4 after the Rutgers last home game of the season there. But as I digress, yeah, I know, we get it. I'm not a C.J. Brown fan, whatever, but it was a good year for the Maryland Terrapins in the Big Ten in their inaugural Big Ten season, and also has been a good year for the Maryland Terrapins men's team, which currently ranks 12th in the nation, and the Maryland women's team, which is in the top 15 in the nation. So
it's a strong year for Maryland sports, their inaugural year in the Big Ten, and all of a sudden, it seems like it was the right decision, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely. So, 2014, yeah, you could say it was a year of doubts. You could say it was a year of pessimism.
And controversy,
but there were highlights. Yeah, some were bittersweet, but in retrospect, when you look at it, Baltimore did have a good sports year in 2014, and Maryland sports had a good year in 2014.
Now we look forward to 2015, and we look forward to bringing you more content here on sfmsports.net. We look forward to bringing you more stuff here in terms of 2015. So as we wrap up the show, Josh, what are you looking forward to in 2015?
In 2015, I do hope the Baltimore Ravens continue on the postseason path, even though they have a very tough road ahead of them. You have the Steelers, you have the Broncos, and the Patriots, who are very tough teams. The Colts, if they can turn it on, can be tough. But we have seen this Ravens team become underdogs and step up to the plate when it matters the most. Also, I do think the Orioles will have a winning season in 2015. Will they make the postseason? I don't know, but they still have a majority of the pieces that they had that contributed very greatly to the cause in 2014.
And some of those have room for improvement as well, and at the same time, spring training, what can happen then?
Yep, absolutely. 2014 college football season, I do think Maryland will finally get themselves a quarterback. Whether it's Caleb Rowe or whether C.J. Brown comes back for his seventh year, I have no idea. He's got to get that law degree, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, there is a lot to look forward to in 2015. And, you know, get your tickets, get your popcorn, get your sody pop, because it's going to be a fun ride.
And hopefully they can avoid some controversy. We're avoiding controversy by not going well above the allotted time. So this is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
I am Josh Hall. We will see you in 2015.